Morning. Today's daf is Chulin Chaf Beis. We are in Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. We're at the top of the Amud, towards the top of the Amud. We're in the middle of a sentence. We're starting with the words Vetanakama. And this is coming off of yesterday's daf that we had a Braisa. Braisa began on the bottom of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. The Braisa takes us through the discussion of what exactly. We'll make room. What exactly is the requirement of Malika when it comes to Ola Sa'of? So let's go over the very basics. When bringing a carbon from a bird, so it has to be prepared through not Shechita, but rather Malika. Malika is where the Kohen takes his fingernail, inserts it into the back of the neck of the bird, and pierces it, and that's what we know. After that, a lot of questions. Does it have to be in a thrusting motion forward, or can it be back and forth? That was the discussion we had earlier in the Masechta. Open-ended as far as the Gemara is concerned. When you take your thumbnail, aren't you rendering the animal in the Vela by going through the vertebrae and severing the vertebrae? So the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends whether or not you hit Rov Basar. If you're hitting Rov Basar, the muscles and ligaments that connect the vertebrae together, so then the animal is in fact rendered an Avela. That's what we learned on Daf Chaf Amud Beis. So therefore, when doing Malika, the Kohen has to be extraordinarily careful to go just through the vertebrae alone, and not severing the muscles and the ligaments of the vertebrae, so that the bird does not immediately become an Avela. Good. So a lot of basic issues that were discussed. In terms of another issue that was discussed, we know that by the Ola, there's a mitzvah of Havdalah. There must be a separation of the head and the body. So when you're doing Malika to an Ola, to an Ola Sa'of, so the nail has to go all the way through, so that not only does it cut the Kana, it cuts the Veshet. So it has to cut both pipes, even though by Shechita, for the Halachas of Shechita concern, you only need to cut one of the two pipes, you don't have to cut both. And furthermore, you have to cut the entirety of those two pipes. It will be insufficient to just simply cut Rov. Rov is a halacha as far as Shechita is concerned. But regarding the special mitzvah of Havdalah, so it has to be a full severance. Good. What I just described to you is the opinion of the Tanakhama as presented on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Tanakhama says is that when the Kohen is doing Malika on the Ola bird, so it has to be a full Havdalah of both simanim of the bird. Masha Inkain, there is another opinion, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, which also is in that same Braisa. Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is actually, the Braisa takes the entirety of Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon says no, that when the Torah introduces us to the mitzvah of the Ola, so it is, even though there is a requirement of Havdalah, but that does not require you to go through the entirety of both Simanim. As long as you go through the majority of both Simanim, that would be sufficient. Good. So that and exactly how they arrive at that conclusion, so that's yesterday's daf. Yesterday, the Gemara quoted a Braisa, starting in Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. It goes all the way to the bottom of, actually goes to the top of Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. And the Braisa goes through the two opinions of the Tanakhama and Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. It happens to also be in the Braisa. I'll make mention of this because the Gemara is going to mention it briefly today. There is another opinion in the Braisa, that of Rabbi Yishmael. But Rabbi Shmuel is not really weighing in on the discussion of whether Havdalah requires to cut the entirety of the Simanim or just the majority of the Simanim. Okay. With all that stated, so that's what our discussion was yesterday. Today really is a take-all from yesterday, and it's really just a clarification of the Braisa. Let's start off like this. Again, a lot of background just to start us off this morning, but it's really a continuation of yesterday. How did the Tanakhama of the Braisa arrive at the conclusion that when for the mitzvah of Havdalah has to be full separation? So he bases it on the following. When the Torah introduces us to the Ola Sa'of, in the context of the carbon Ola V'yored, remember the achatas that's brought for the person who violates particular avers in the Torah, all mentioned in the fifth parak of Vayikra, where under those circumstances he has to bring a chatas and an Ola. And when the Torah says, V'esashini yaseh Ola, kamishpat. The second bird you're going to be bringing as an Ola. First bird is a Chatz, the second bird is an Ola. And the second bird is going to be brought Kamishpat, like the laws. Like the laws of what? So the Torah is not clear. And so to that, the Tanakhama says, I'll tell you what it's like. Chatz is Behema. So it's going to be like the laws of Chatz is Behema and a number of comparisons between the laws of the Ola bird and the Chatz is Behema. But as far as the halachas of Havdalah are concerned, so the halachas of Havdalah mean that you need full separation. That's the Tanakhama. Masha'inkin, according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, he says, no, Kamishpat is coming to tell me, Kamishpat Chatzas Ha'of. The Ola bird is going to be like the Chatzas bird. Just like the Chatzas bird, there is no requirement of full separation of the simanim, and also, by the way, by the Chatzas bird, you only have to cut one simon. So by the Ola bird, there also does not need to be full separation of the simanim, just simply majority, and that would be sufficient. Okay? That's all the review of yesterday, and a very brief review of yesterday. Let's pick it up where we left off, Chav Beis Amad Aleph, with the words V'tana Kama. So now, with these opinions in mind, so the Gemara just wants a couple of follow-up questions on the Braisa, a little more clarification, a little bit better understanding. How do I know that there has to be full separation? So he bases it on the following. If you remember in yesterday's daf, so the source of the Tana Kama that you need full separation comes to the following. The Torah says, v'malak v'hikter. Now that's not the pasuk verbatim. We're just taking out the verbs of the Torah. Malika is the naping of the bird, of the piercing of the bird, and hikter is the burning of the bird. We know that when it comes to Akhtar, when you burn the bird Ola, when you burn the Ola bird, so head and body must be separated one from another. In other words, there are two different haktaras, the head and the body, which means that they're totally separated. So the same thing is going to be true regarding the malika. The head and the body must be separated. That's the source, according to the Tana Kama, that there has to be full havdalah. So the Gemara says, v'hikri vo lamali. Well, if that's true, which it is, so then we also have the words v'hikri vo, and you're going to offer it. And again, if you go back to yesterday's daf, you'll remember that we learned out from the word v'hikri vo, what the Torah is telling us is clear differentiation between the chatas bird and the ola bird. They're different. V'hikri vo tells us I'm going to be offering it separately from that of the ola bird. They're different. To which the Gemara says, so, but I don't need the word v'hikri vo, because I already have the drasha of v'malak v'hiktir. So the Gemara explains, ila v'hikri vo hava mina mai kimishpa kimishpa chatas ha'of. So the Gemara says, look, here's what I would have thought. I would have thought that if we didn't have the word of v'hikri vo telling us that there's clear differentiation between the two, I would have said kamishpat is like chatzas ha'of, which, by the way, that's Rebbe Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint. But in the Tana Kama's viewpoint, that would have been the Havamina. And imi shumu malak v'hiktir, and here's what I would have thought. Oh, and what about the drasha of a malak v'hiktir, the two verbs that are reported back to back? Havamina ma'ak tara b'rosh ha'shem mizbech, ha'plika b'rosh ha'shem mizbech. I would have thought like this. What the Torah is trying to generate by putting these two verbs back to back is that the Torah is not telling us how to do Malika, but rather the Torah is telling us where to do Malika. Where should I be doing Malika? Well, I know where I'm doing the Haktara. The Haktara is done on the top of the Mizbeach. I would have thought that the Malika should be done on the top of the Mizbeach. Malika necessarily has to be done. There's a Havamina. Malika necessarily would have to be done on the top of the Mizbeach. And so therefore, that's what I would have done with that Drasha. And, okay, but how should the Chsiv Rachmana v'hikri vo? But now that the Torah says the words v'hikri vo, so where it's clear differentiation between the Chatzos and the Ola, so Drosh Bein Amiha, so therefore we have now a new avenue to darshan the words v'malak v'hiktir, meaning that we're not telling us where, but rather it's telling us how. Now that I know that I have to do the Ola differently than that of the Chatzos, I just do Malika, and I only cut one simon, and I don't even have to cut the entire simon. In other words, rova the simon would be good. When it comes to the Ola bird, it's different. V'hikri vo, telling me that it's different. How is it different? Okay, so now I know. It's different than that. Ruba is not enough. It has to be kulo, it has to be all of it. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. Chatas behema deno ba elam enachul minalan. Again, going back to a point that we made yesterday. What exactly do we learn out from the pasuk of Kamishpat? So according to the Tana Kama, it's coming to compare the Ola bird to the Chatas animal. To which now the Gemara says, okay, we're comparing the Ola bird to the Chatas animal, so let's consider what halachas were communicated from the Chatas animal to the Ola bird. So if you remember yesterday's daf, there were three different halachas that were communicated. One, this is all according to the Tana Kama. One, that when you're buying the Ola bird, it has to be coming from chulin. It cannot come from it cannot come from monies that were already earmarked as karban. Two, it can only be offered during the day, not at night. And three, the third halacha is right, and right hand and right handedness. So these are the three halachas that we're taking from the Chatzis animal, and we're moving it and we're transposing it over to the Ola bird. To which the Gemara says, okay, I have a couple of follow-up questions. They're very straightforward. Number one, The Gemara says, Chatas behema deino ba'ala menachul minalan. Good. So we're learning the halacha that when I buy my ola bird, it has to be coming from chulamani because that's true by a chatas animal. Okay, great. Now, how do I know that by the chatas animal it has to be coming from chulamani? Where do we know that? So Amar Chista Amar Kras. So we've heard this drush already numerous times. We heard it back in Zvachim. We heard it in Menachos. Now we're hearing it in Chulin again. So again, once again, we hit the trifecta of the three first mesechtas of Kachin teaching us the same halacha. V'ikriv Aaron is par chatas shelo. Mishalom v'shal v'lo mishal tzibur v'lo mishal meiser. Torah says that when the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is offering his par, his bull, right? Not to be confused with the seer. The seer is a communal offering that's bought with public money, that's providing a kapar for the Jewish people. But when we're talking about the par of the Kohen, it's his par. And his, we mean financially. It's coming out of his pocket. And when it's coming out of his pocket, as Rashi right here on the Gemara points out, it says the word asher lo twice in the Torah. So it means like this. Number one, asher lo, you cannot use communal funds to buy that car, but it has to be coming from private money, i.e. his money. Number two, the Gemara says, and Rashi explains, it also can't even come from his Maaser Sheni money. Meaning Maaser Sheni money may be considered yours. We always debate throughout Shas whether Maaser Sheni money belongs to you or it's Mamon Hedger or it's Mamon Gavoa. Even if it's Mamon Hedger, but still, it's not considered chulin enough money where the Kohen Gadol can be using it in order to buy his par. The par chatzos of the Kohen, that Kohen Gadol that he's offering on Yom Kippur, must be coming from chulin money. Totally non-consecrated money, non-dedicated money. So that's true regarding now a chatzos. This is our starting point for the whole discussion. So now that we've established that when you're buying your chatzos, it has to be coming from chulin money. And now we have the drasha, according to the Tanna Kamma, that Kamishpat tells us that the same halacha is true regarding the ola bird. So therefore, this halacha now is able to be moving over now to the ola bird as well. Okay. Bayom ibayom tzavasa nafka. The second halacha that we learned in yesterday's daf, in terms of what we are generating from the halachas of the chatzis animal to the ola bird, is that just like the chatzis animal is done during the day, so too the ola bird also is going to be done during the day. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why, I don't need a drasha for that, because we already have a drasha, and specifically mibayom tzavasa. The Torah says that you're offering karbanos only during the daytime. And so this is really the source. So I don't need the drasha of Kamishpat to tell me this halacha. The Gemara says, you are right. So the Gemara says, Kedei Naspa. The reason why the Braisa introduced this halacha over here is only incidentally. It's not really the source of the halacha. It just simply comes Argav Archa. Now, you have to ask the question. I don't have an answer. Why exactly does the Braisa include it, even though it's not really the primary source? There must be some sort of indication or like hint or clue that there is something that has to do with regarding daytime specific to the Parsha of Kamishpat. I can't tell you what that is, but anyway, it's not the real drasha. It's not the real source. And finally, Yado HaYamanis. As far as right-handedness is concerned, Mida Rabba Bar Bachana Nafka. So that's learned from Rabba Bar Bachana. The Amar, Rabba Bar Bachana, Rav Shimon Malakish, Shul Kol Makom Shenemar Etzbo Kahuna Eino Ela Yamin. So once again, we all know. We know that when the Torah says either etzber kahuna, so it means right hand, right-handedness. And so once again, this goes back to yesterday's daf. Yesterday's daf, we were learning it based on the drasha of Kamishpat. Why do I need the drasha of Kamishpat? Just simply tell me that anytime you read a parsha of Karbanos in the Torah, and I see either the word kohen or I see the word etzba, so I know it's right-handedness, and so therefore I don't need another drasha for that. V'idach, the Gemara goes on to explain, okay, that you're right, but not everyone agrees that these are the two key words that indicate right-handedness. Some are of the opinion that kahuna by etzba, etzba lo by kahuna. If the Torah says the word etzba, so you're right. So, meaning, and I mean that with the double entendre. So you're right. Meaning that comes both with that. That is the right. That's the reference to the right hand. However, if the Torah says the word kohen and not the word etzba, some are of the opinion that that does not indicate necessarily that the kohen has to be using his right hand. So therefore, by the ola bird, there's no etzba referenced in that particular parsha. And so now there are opinions that say that if there's no etzba reference, we don't necessarily know that it has to be done with the right hand. I comes along the drasha of Kamishpat to tell me that even for the ola bird, it has to be done with the right hand. And with all that stated, okay, that was a mouthful, I understand, but that was all just simply clarification points from the Gemara we learned yesterday, and specific to the opinion of the Tanna Kamma of yesterday's daf. And finally, one last point to consider before we move on to the next sugya, and that is, remember in the middle of yesterday's Braisa, the Braisa that covers Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph all the way to the top of Chaf Beis Amud Beis, the top of Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, so in the middle of that Braisa you have an opinion Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Shmuel taught us in yesterday's Braisa, Kemishma Chatzah Sa'of Ma Chatzah Sa'of Mimul Oref, Af Ola Sa'of Mimul Oref. So the Kamishpa tells me that the Ola bird is like what? Like the Chatas bird. You see, because by the Ola bird, the Torah never actually says Mimul Oref. Those words are only used in conjunction to the Chatas bird. How do I know the location of where Malika is done on the Ola bird? So according to Rabbi Shmuel, the word Kamishpat is sending me right back above, meaning to the parsha of the Chatas bird. So just like the Chatas bird is Mimul Oref, so too the Ola bird is Mimul Oref. And that's, according to Rabbi Shmuel, what we do with the word Kamishpat, which only begs the question, which the Gemara now is asking. So that's good for Rabbi Shmuel. But if you are either the Tanakhama or your Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, where you're taking the word Kamishpat and you're sending it in other directions, so where do we know this halacha that the Malika is done for the Ola bird, Mimul Oref? How do I know it? Gemara asks the question, Gemara gives a very straightforward answer. V'tanakama v'Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Shimon mimul oref minalahu. How do they know the halacha that for the Ola bird it has to be done mimul oref? So gemir malika mimalika. So the Gemara says it's a drasha. What kind of drasha exactly is this? So if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi describes it as the binyan av. Rashi gamri malika mimalika. It's the last Rashi before the next Mishnah. Be'mem matzinu. So Rashi describes it as a mem matzinu, or what we also describe as a binyanav. Mamalika amur bechatas pirsh lecha b'hakasav mul aref af kol malika eino ela mimul aref. So once the Torah, one place, notably the chatas bird, tells us what malika looks like, so too the Torah now is, so from that point forward now we have set the precedent. That's mematzino, that's what a binyanav is, it's now a precedent. Now we have a working definition of what malika is. From this point going forward, anytime the Torah says the words malika, we know by definition, where do I do the malika? Oh, mimul aref. How do I know that? I just go back to the chatas bird, where the Torah says it specifically. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya, and we are now in the Mishnah, Chav Beis Amud Aleph, and we are now going to go a little bit off course. Okay, the Mishnah is now for the end, until the end of the perek, so it's like for the next four dapim. So the Mishnahs are now going to go on a little bit of a detour. And we're not unfamiliar with this. This happens all the time throughout Shas, where once the Mishnah gets us into a particular pattern, a sing-song pattern, so from that point going forward, what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi likes to do, is string together numerous Mishnayos that follow that same pattern. I'll give you a good example, the first parak of Megillah. So the first parak of Megillah, so one of the Mishnayos over there describes Ein Bein. There's no difference between this and this except, now the Mishnah over there was making a point regarding Adar Aleph and Adar Beis, which is relevant to the topic of Masechta Megillah. And then from that point going forward, oh my gosh, it was just a whole string of Ein Beins. There's no difference between this and this except. And the Mishnayos over there at the end of the first parak of Megillah literally go all over the place in Halach and Shas in terms of Ein Beins. Over here in our Mishnayos, so what did we just do in our most recent Mishnah? Our most recent Mishnah, by the way, was back on... I just lost the spot. Where'd that Mishnah go? There it is. Okay, sorry. Our last mission was on your Testament base, right? If I were to edit the tape, by the way, I would just like take out those last like 10 seconds. Anyway, All right. Anyway, the last mission was on New Testament base, where the Mishnah over there told us that contrasting Malika to Shechita, the Mishnah over there says that Kol HaKasher B'Shechita Pasul Malika. Anything that's good for Shechita is bad for Malika. Anything that's disqualified for Malika is good for Shechita. In other words, Shechita and Malika are mirror images of one another. Okay, so now we're talking about mirror images. So the Mishnahs going forward now are going to fit into this theme of mirror images. What exactly are inversions of one another? Good. And that is now what the Mishnayos are going to be doing. So we're going to be leaving. Actually, this first Mishnah over here still has something to do with Karbanos, although we're learning Masechta Chulin. But you'll see, though, the Mishnayos that we're going to be learning over the next couple of days are really going to take us off course of Chulin, and only when we start the next perek are we going to go back to the topic of Chulin. Okay, good. So just a little bit of a tour guide in terms of what is happening now in the Mishnayos. We're talking about birds as karbanos, so this is something that we discussed extensively. There is a small masechta tucked away at the end of Seder Kachim, which we will be learning in the Daf Yomi, let's just say 10 months from now, even less than 10 months from now, masechta kinim, three prakim, that detail the halachas of birds being offered as a karban. It's called kinim because kinim is a nest. In other words, then basically birds generally come as karbanos as a pair. That's why it's referred to as kinim. But anyway, we know that when it comes to birds, there are two types of birds that are eligible to be brought as a karban, and that's it. The tur and the ben yonah. Okay, and just for today, I have it straight, but only for today. I won't have it straight again. The tur is a turtle dove. Great. And the ben yonah is a pigeon. And even though, for you and me, we are allowed to eat and consume many different birds of the world, as I already described recently, Torah only disqualifies... trafes up 24 species of birds. The other birds of the world are all good. Yes, there is a problem. We don't know how to identify the 24 birds of the Torah. Okay, separate issue on a separate day. Later in the Masechta, actually, we're going to be discussing much more of this in detail. But as far as the carbon is concerned, only two types of bird can be brought as a carbon, only the Torah and only the Ben Yonah, and that's it. And now what we're going to be learning together in the Mishnah is rates of maturation when it comes to these birds. In other words, it seems to be, and I do not know. So you cannot ask me from a, hey, have you studied bird recently? No, not recently, not ever. So I simply work with the basic assumptions that the Gemara is presenting over here. The maturation rate of these birds are very similar to one another. They basically are born. They have sort of like a whitish coloring to them, white, black, or grayscale, whatever, however you want to describe it. And then as they mature, they start to get color. What color do they get when they start maturing? Both of these birds. So first they turn yellow, then they turn gold. So we're going in terms of maturation for both of these birds. We're going from some sort of grayscale to a yellowing to then a gold. Now, in terms of development, we have this all throughout halacha in terms of this model, where basically you have stage one of immaturity. Let's call it katnus. You have a middle stage, right? Let's call it adolescence, okay? And then we have adulthood, okay? And we have this by the development of women in terms of halacha. We have a katana, we have a nara, we have a bulgaris. So over here in terms of the maturation of birds, so we're also working with three different stages. So we have katnus, we have the middle stage, again, I'll call it adolescence, and we have godless. So over here, what the Mishnah is about to teach us, and it's going to be the singular point of the rest of today's daf, is that when we're talking about the tur, the turtle dove, it has to be an adult turtle dove. It has to reach the point of full maturation. When it comes to a ben yonah, so it has to be immature. It has to be a katana. It has to be at the point where it is not yet matured and not yet reached the point of adulthood. It has to be, again, I'm using these language, I'm borrowing language. It has to be a katana. Good. And in terms of when they're in that middle stage, so stay tuned, because we're going to discuss it a little bit today and a lot more tomorrow. So, Kasha B'Torim, Pasul B'Bnei Yonah, Kasha B'Bnei Yonah, Pasul B'Torim. So now, as I gave you that introduction, the Mishnah reads really easy. Whatever is good for the turtle dove is bad for the pigeon. And whatever is good for the pigeon is bad for the turtle dove, meaning that they are mirror images of one another in terms of which one's eligible and which one's ineligible. If we're talking about katnus, so the ben yonah is eligible and the tur is ineligible. When we're talking about godless, just the opposite. Now, what about that middle stage? So the Mishnah writes over here, at tsihuv bezeh bezeh pasul. If we're at the point of tsihuv, which is that yellowing of the feathers, so at this middle stage, so they are both no good, meaning adolescence is the worst. And right, okay. In other words, you're neither here nor you're there. Tanu Rabbanu, we start with the Gemara over here. Tarin Gedolin Kshem Ketanim Psulim. The Gemara opens up with a Braisa, which basically is going to tell us the information that we knew already from the Mishnah, that when the Torah tells us that you bring a turtle dove, so it has to be mature, not immature. B'nei Yonah Ketanim Kshem Gedolin Psulim. And as far as the pigeon is concerned, just the opposite. Immature is acceptable, and adult is unacceptable. Nimsa Kasha B'Torin Pasul B'nei Yonah Kasha B'nei Yonah Pasul B'Torin. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what we have learned new in this Braisa. The Braisa really repeated exactly what we learned back in the Mishnah. The Gemara quotes it. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, let's continue. Okay, Fine. Okay. Oh, you know what? That's an excellent point. That's a great observation. Meaning the Mishnah just simply says kosher and pasul. Oh. Okay. I accept that. That's a really good point. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the Brisa. We're on the bottom of Chav Beis Aman Aleph. Tarim Gedolim Velo Ketanim. When the Torah says Tarim, it's by definition adult, not minor. Sheyachav Velo Dinu. Now, as far as making an argument, we could make the following argument. Now, as it relates to Bnei Yona, so we know adult is no good, but a minor is good. So, by Torim, where the adult is acceptable, so can't you make the argument that the minor is also should be acceptable? Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't understand the Kal Vachomer. I'm talking from my own limited perspective. Meaning, the argument, when we're making logical arguments, Kal Vachomers, so it's because logically you can make a reasonable argument that this is better than this, or this is more stringent than this. When we're talking about adulthood versus maturity versus immaturity, I don't know what's better than the next or more stringent than the next. So I'm just being honest. I don't fully understand the rationale, the reasoning behind the argument. And we're going to do the same thing now in the other direction. I'm sorry. Tamalomer Torim Gedolim Velo Ketanim. So that's why the Torah goes out of its way to say Torim, which by definition means adult. Hopefully, you're wondering to yourselves, how do I know the Torah means by definition adult? Meaning, Torah means everything. Any turtle dove, whether it's an adult or whether it's a minor. So it's a wonderful question. In fact, the Gemara is going to ask it in just a moment. So please wait. Bnei Yona Ketanim Velo Gedolim. We're going to do the opposite now. When it comes to the Bnei Yona, so the pigeons. So by definition, it's an immature pigeon, not a mature pigeon. Sheyachav Velo Dinu, and then once again, we can make the following argument. Uma Tarim Shelo Hukshu B'Ketanim Hukshu B'Gedolim. So when it comes to a turtle dove, so it's unacceptable when they're minors, but acceptable when they're adults. So Bnei Yona Shelo Hukshu B'Ketanim Eino Din Shelo Hukshu B'Gedolim. So can we now make the argument that for Bnei Yona, which are acceptable as minors, for sure should be acceptable as adults. So Tamalom Bnei Yona Ketanim Velo Gedolim. That's why the Torah goes out of its way to say Bnei Yona, which is by definition Ketanim, not Gedolim. And again, I'll say the same thing also. I don't understand the rationale, the reason behind this Kal Vachomer, but okay. Anyway, we could have made a Kal Vachomer. We don't because the Torah says otherwise. My Talmud. Now the Gemara asked the question which I foreshadowed just a moment ago. Meaning, how exactly do we get the point from the point of the Torah says Torim? Oh, that's adult. Oh, we know that's adult. The Torah says Bnei Yona? Oh, that's for sure immature birds. Like, how do we know that? So, Amar Rava lo lishamik Rava lichsa min bnei atorim o min yona. So, Rava makes a great observation, a factual observation. Look through the entirety of the Torah when the Torah describes birds being offered as a carbon. Not once, not one time, when the Torah describes the yona, the Torah simply says, oh, and you're going to bring the yona on the mizbech. The Torah always describes it as bnei yona. By definition, that means that the Torah wants us to bring a bird that has not reached the point of maturation. The Torah wants us to bring an immature. I'm not talking psychologically, emotionally. I'm just talking physically. The Torah wants us to bring an immature Yona, because every single time the Torah says the words Bnei Yona. To which the Gemara says, okay, that is a good point, but Ema Bnei Yona Dekasabu Rechmana Bnei Ketanim In Gedolim Lo. So the Gemara says, so I'll give that to you. It's a really good point. But Torim, Ibai Gedolim Lesi, Ibai Ketanim Lesi. So the Gemara says, but here's my follow-up. When the Torah introduces us to the turtle dove, the Torah simply says the words Torim. Torim means turtle dove. So can we make the argument that for the Bnei Yona, I'll give you that. It has to be immature because the Torah keeps using the words Bnei. So it has to be immature. But can we make the argument that by Torim, it could be either or? It could be mature or immature? Why are you arguing that Torim, by definition, has to, by definition, mean mature? Well, the Gemara is going to give a slightly different argument, but yeah, the Gemara is going to answer. So, Dumi de Bnei Yona, Ma Bnei Yona Ketanim In Gedolim Lo, Avtarim Gedolim In Bnei Ketanim Lo. Yeah, very similar to what you're saying, Danny, and that if the Torah would have allowed us to bring Torim of any age in any range, so the Torah would not have kept contrasting it against the Ben Yona. By virtue of the fact that the Torah goes out of its way to say Ben Yona, and the Torah never says that regarding the Torah, and the Torah only uses the words Torim and not Bnei Torim, so the Torah is telling us basically that I want from one and not from the other. Meaning I want a mirror image of the two. I want the Bnei Yona to specifically be immature. I want the Torah to specifically be mature. Tana Rabbanan. Right in the middle of Chav Beis Amud base. Yachol you call a Torah v'chol b'nei Yonah k'sherim tamalamer min atorim v'lo kol atorim. Min b'nei Yonah v'lo kol b'nei Yonah. So the Torah, by using the word min, and we had this kind of drasha consistently throughout Kachim, Seder Kachim, that when you see the word min, it means not every one of them. Some of them are no good. So when the Torah says min hatorim, and when the Torah says min b'nei Yonah, it means not all of them. So what are we knocking off? What are we paring down as it relates to birds? So to which the Gemara's response is the beginning of tzihuv, the beginning of yellowing. So again, like I described in the beginning of this sugya, mm-hmm. So we have the following developmental stages. First it comes out without coloring, then it starts to color, it starts to develop a hue, notably a yellow hue, and then it goes gold. So prior to the yellowing, it's immature. When it turns gold, it's fully mature. So during this yellowing stage, so what is it? So exactly. In other words, when the Torah says min hatorim and min b'nei Yonah, it means that from the Torah we mean to say that the yellowing, that's the adolescent stage, no good. That's what we're knocking off the table. And when it comes to the b'nei Yonah, what are we saying? That the yellowing stage, even though that's not full maturity, we're knocking that off the table as well. So this middle stage of yellowing, this adolescent stage of bird development, so this is no good, neither for the Ben Yonah, nor is it for the Torah. Me'emasai term k'sherim. Now the way Rashi understands the Gemara over here goes like this. Good. So now we know that from what point in time are the Torah going to be kosher? Mishiyaz hivu. So from the time of gold. So in other words, when the yellow turns to gold, so at that point in time, now we are full maturation of the bird. So now you can bring the Torah. Wonderful. Now me'emasai b'nei Yonah p'sulim. Now, from what point in time are the b'nei Yonah going to be disqualified? Now, as Rashi explains over here, we're not talking about the point of maturation because we already know. Meaning, once the feathers start yellowing, so already at that point in time, it's disqualified. We're not going on that limit on the maturation side. We're actually going on the other side. Meaning, immediately after it's hatched. Immediately after it's hatched, we're going to have to wait just a little bit before we offer it as a carbon. And again, if I can give you a model of like where we find this by animals, but this is a pasuk in the Torah, right? This you don't have to know Gemara for this, you just have to know Chumash. So this is a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says that when an animal is born, so for the first 7 days, it's just simply too young. You have to wait for the animal to complete a week, uvayomash mini mehala, so yeretzeh, only from day 8 and onward can it be offered. So now we know when it comes to animals, so you just have to wait to a certain point of development where you could first offer it as a carbon. And so over here, we're doing now the same thing regarding birds. Now, we don't have to ask the question by Torim, because we know by Torim, you have to wait a significant amount of time. You have to wait until it fully develops, until the feathers turn gold. But when it comes to the B'nai Yonah, which can be used and has to be used at the point of immaturity, so at what point can we first start to use the B'nai Yonah? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara gives a very straightforward answer. Not to say that I understand it anatomically, but the Gemara gives a really clear answer. So the Gemara says, I went a little bit ahead of myself. Okay. Everything I said is correct, but not yet. So just hold my point for just a moment. So when it comes to the B'nai Yonah, when is it disqualified? So that's when they start yellowing. Sorry. The Bryce over here is addressing the age of where it is now too old, when it starts getting yellow color. Now, everything I said is correct, just fit it into the Gemara right now. Tini Yaakov Karcham Emesai B'nai Yonah K'sherim. Okay, good. When can I offer the B'nai Yonah? When's the first time I can offer the B'nai Yonah? Mishiya Al'u. So he has a bright, so the bright quotes a word that is not a word used very often. Mishiya'alu. So who tanila v'hum amarla. So he says over the bright, so meaning Yaakov Karcha is teaching over the Brysa, and then after having taught over the Brysa, so now he's giving us the definition of the Brysa. Right, that's what I just did, I paraphrased Rashi. So he says, Efrochav ya'alu dam. Quoting the pasuk from Eov, so we're talking about where the blood starts circulating. Now, again, I do not know physiologically, anatomically, well enough the bird development in terms of understanding this point of the Gemara over here. But the way Rashi describes it, there basically is, after it's born, the blood is a little superficial. And when it starts now, the blood starts going back into the body and starts circulating in the body. So at that point in time now, that would be the first way, the first opportunity you can offer the B'nai Yonah. To which the Gemara asks the question, Amos. Okay, good. And now, just how are we going to know? Meaning, what would be a way of determining, of testing, to see that we have arrived at this point? So Amar Abaye Mechisha Megadfa Minei Vasi Dame. So Abaye says, here's what you do. You just simply pull out a feather, and if you see some blood coming out, so you now know that, okay, it's ready to be offered as a carbon. Good. That's going to be our test. Again, I don't know.
Is it possible to eat these birds without being
What do you mean? In terms of what?
If they're not a carbon, can we eat them like a regular?
Yeah, in other words, a kosher bird.
I know, but the thing is, like, you never talk about them as being like edible, like as whole.
Coming up later in the Masechta, the Gemara is going to tell us that when it comes to birds, the Torah tells us 24 birds you can't eat, the rest of them we're allowed to eat. The Mishnayos later on are going to give us simanim of which birds are kosher, which ones are not. Those simanim are presumably rabbinically based, but the Torah B'nai Yonah are not one of the 24. They are totally kosher. Again, we're not going to eat pigeons, we're not going to eat turtle doves. A, I doubt they taste good. And B, again, we have lost the Mesorah of what the 24 are. So, but you asked me the question, like, fundamentally, are they kosher? The kosher birds.
The turtles are not gold, and they are silver and gold.
Again, that's...
Where is the gold coming?
Again, because you and I, we think we know which birds the Torah is describing. You know, I say turtle dove because that's the English translation. Doesn't mean that we know for sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. Anyway. Rabbi Chanan Menachashim Ratzakash Baruch Lezak Yisrael Fichach Yerben Tar Mitzvah Shenema Anai Chafetz Amantziko Yagdil Tar Avi Adir.